Hello, it's Soraru Neketsu Seinen, Dylan Fox, and I'm running solo for the first edition of the Eastern Lariat's G1 Climax live reaction shows. The show had just ended about half an hour ago, maybe 45 minutes now. I wanted to take a shower, get myself in the right state of mind before I recorded today. Tonight for me, obviously, the rare occurrence of a night show. Obviously, the first show being in America. Unfortunately, I will not be joined by the usual co-host, Striga, of CageMatch.net. He's at some sort of festival in Germany. It had a German name. It was like Schützenfest or something. There's a lot of drinking going on. So wherever you are, buddy, I hope you haven't forgot about me. I hope you're having fun. And just know that all the listeners miss you. But even still, it was a huge show tonight, and I can't wait to talk to you all about it. Riding solo right now, hopefully you can tolerate that. Hopefully it's a good experience for everybody, because this is a free edition of the live reaction shows that I'm going to be doing. You know, I'm not going to lie to you and say that I've reinvented the wheel or anything like that. Obviously, other people have done similar things, reviewing every single night of the G1 in podcast form. And I really respect those guys, you know, like guys like John Pollock, guys like Joe Lanza, post-wrestling VOW. I'm not trying to disregard them or anything like that, but hopefully my own brand of takes and entertainment that we have for you, that's going to be good for you guys too. But so this is a little bit of a preview for everybody. It was the first night in Dallas in America. So why not make it free for everybody, you know? No matter where you're at, if you're in America, if you're in Europe, Japan, we've got some Japanese listeners that's really been representing strong lately. I'm not really sure why that is, to be honest, but I'm really happy. You know, that always makes me happy when people from Japan have nice things to say, when people from anywhere have nice things to say, really. But you know how this is going to go. It's not some crazy deep show where there are a million topics. It's one show, the G1, Night 1 in Dallas. And there are multiple things to talk about, mostly the matches. First of all, I will give Striga his spot in the sun just for now, just for Night 1. He did win the pick'em contest between us. I still had a good showing. I still did good, 4 out of 5 right, but he went perfect. I know some other people went perfect too. Guys like James Z on Twitter were bragging about it. There was one match that got me. But that's okay. There's still a long tournament to go. I'm not counting myself out of the pick'ems or anything like that. And I definitely think it was the wrong decision, me getting it wrong. But we'll get to that a little bit later. But congratulations, Striga. On night one, you beat me. You went perfect. Good job. Now, next time, the big deciding match. Because there was only one match we had different. On Block B, only Cobb and Ishii, we disagreed on, so that's going to be the tiebreaker, more or less. But let's get to the show right now. It was the G1 Climax, Night 1 in Dallas, a huge show for everybody. The 29th edition of the G1, and I want to go through the whole card real quick. The undercard wasn't anything crazy, they were all short matches, but I'll talk about them a little bit, because there was some good stuff on the show, and one match that really stood out. First of all, we had Kevin Kelly and Rocky Romero. They were on commentary here for the show. This was an Access Television production, so to speak. So we're going to see how that goes. Show started off with Roppongi 3K taking on the tag team champions, the Guerrillas of Destiny. And this went under 7 minutes. It was a quick match, but this had a lot of fire to it. I will say this on the show. You have to give this Dallas crowd a gold star. We're going to talk about that crowd more, because that's a big talking point in the show in terms of the number of people there. But everybody really made a lot of noise for this, and it came across great on the shows. I saw some people on Twitter that were there live. They were saying how, you know, all of the cheers and the big pops would just fade away into the empty arena or the big arena or whatever. But on TV, they did a great job. This was much, much better crowd miking than the Madison Square Garden show that they did with Ring of Honor. And I think we know who handled production on that show. And it was not New Japan, based on how things came across here, because the crowd was just making a lot of noise. This crowd was hyped from the get-go. And they really willed Roppongi 3K on here. The tag champs got the win. And Tangaloa got the pin on Yo with the super bomb. It was a really good opener, I thought. Nobody really, there wasn't any kind of goofy stuff here or anything like that. I thought Tangaloa actually looked really good here too. He did a senton on Atomico at one point. They were doing some good work together as a team. Roppongi 3K looked really great. And I thought Rocky did good at commentary too. So really solid opener. The next match, though, really elevated things, and the crowd elevated especially, because we had Shota Umino and Tomohiro Ishii taking on Rin Narita and Jeff Cobb. This is obviously set up for B-Block's opening night of Cobb and Ishii, as I mentioned earlier. That's going to be the deciding match. We're going to see who wins. But it's okay. Even if I'm wrong, I don't mind, because that would mean Ishii would win. Either way, I win, really, when you think about it. So the crowd was huge into this match. Some people, somebody messaged me after the show and said this was the match they were hottest for the whole night. And Ishii and Cobb did an amazing job spurring them on. There was tons of heated exchanges between these two guys. And my earlier prognostications that we could see Ring of Honor Cobb become New Japan Cobb, off to a good start. Especially after the disgraceful way they handled his main event against Matt Taven on the Ring of Honor pay-per-view, where he lost in a very lackluster match in under 10 minutes. Not a good main event at all. Bad way to send him off. But, you know, whatever, it's Ring of Honor. Here, it's like a whole other universe. And Cobb felt invigorated. I think Cobb is really going to take advantage of this opportunity and make the best of it. You know, this is somebody who's in Ring of Honor. You know, you weren't getting a crowd like this that was this hot, you know, in all likelihood. So these guys had a ton of heat, like I said, and I thought the Young Lions were awesome, especially Narita. I thought he is, you know, I love everything about that guy. You know, there's just no question about it. Longtime listeners know that that's my guy. Narita coming off the great Best of Super Juniors run that he had. I thought he was one of the best performers in that whole tournament. And here he looks very strong again, going against, you know, Ishii. Umino looked really good too. These guys have a bright future ahead of them as in-ring workers. The star power, where it really depends on how far they go with them booking-wise more than anything. But in-ring, they've already got it. And basically, this all ended with Cobb. He hit the Tour of the Islands on Umino to get the win. That was obviously an expected result here. They needed to do some stuff here. I thought Umino had a lot of fire. They had some great exchanges, and Narita did as well. And when Cobb and Ishii, they built up to that really well in this match as well. It only went, it was again an under 8 minute match, but they did a lot of good stuff here. The crowd was super into it, and after the match, Cobb and Ishii had a brawl, pull apart. It was freaking awesome. Like, I can't wait for this match next week. That's going to be incredible. And that was definitely one of the highlights of the show to me. I know a lot of people are going to, you know, have their favorite matches. And somebody actually said this was their favorite match on the show. And I can definitely buy it. This felt like the most excited and heated that the crowd got. The next match was the Chaos Team, Hiroki Goto and Yoshihashi, versus the Bullet Club team of Switchblade Jay White and Chase Owens. Gato was there as well. This match was all about Goto. He looked absolutely incredible here in this match, and continues to show why he's one of the best in-ring performers in the company, if not the best, in my opinion. These four had an incredible... really, Goto was the one that looked incredible. The other three, they were solid. I thought Hashi and Owens, they did solid. They worked hard. You know what you're going to get with those two. They did their best here. But to me, Goto was the star of the match. White, he was solid as well. He was doing a lot of heelish work, you know, and things like that. But still, they kept the nonsense to a minimum. You know, White had his spots. Yoshihashi was making some saves. Owens, he did some work with White a little bit. But I thought these guys did, you know, they had a solid little match. It wasn't anything great. great. But I thought it was a really strong tag match. You know, this went a little longer than the previous two. They built up to White and Goto for next week. Much like Cobb, I think they needed to give Goto a bit of momentum because he's coming back from his hiatus. And yeah, if you listen to the Patreon exclusive G1 preview I did, I had Goto beating Jay White. And I think that's an obvious pick for a lot of people. But yeah, the others all look good, but I thought Goto really stood out here. And I can't wait to see what he does throughout this whole G1. I think he's going to be an MVP candidate that, unfortunately, we know how it is with Goto. He gets underrated. But man, what a great worker. I love that guy. Next up, we had the six-man, Jushin Thunder Liger, Juice Robinson, and Toru Yano. Very random inclusion there. They took on the LIJ team of Shingo Takagi, Bushi, and Tetsuya Naito. Liger had a good spotlight early on. Him and Bushi started off. Juice ended up getting a hot tag. And he looked good when he got the tag and things like that. And built up to Yano and Naito. You know, that's obviously their first match as well. That was really what this was all about. Building up Naito and Yano and Juice and Shingo. This wasn't as good as the other matches, I thought. You know, besides one of the singles matches, this was probably the worst match on the show. But still, it accomplished what they needed to. And Yano scored a low blow on Bushi and a roll-up for the win. The crowd was pretty into it. You know how it goes with these guys. A lot of these guys get big pops in America, especially. And Naito's looking really over. So, good job here. It wasn't a great match or anything you need to rush out to see. But, you know, I thought the other two matches were a bit better, though. Those, like, if you wanted to watch those, you'll feel like, man, I saw a really good match. Especially the Cobb and Ishii tag. Now we're going to get, before we get to the G1, I'm going to break up the monotony, so to speak, and talk a little bit about the show itself. And by the show itself, I mean the crowd. Because they announced that New Japan will be coming back to the United States. And it's going to be in Boston, New York City, and Philly in the Hammerstein Ballroom. It's going to be on September 27th, 28th, and 29th. Clearly some ECW influence here to pick these kind of venues. But I think that is a good place to be for them, especially considering how this show went. And I'll tell you right now, it was listed as 4,846 people in attendance. Now look, the American Airlines Center in Dallas holds 18,000 to 20,000, depending on who you know or who you ask. This was an incredibly poor number. Like, there's no real nice way to spin it. Anybody who says it's not that bad is lying. Like, there's just, or they don't get it. You know. It's just basic math. You don't run a 20,000 seat arena to draw less than 5,000 people. That's a bad idea. That's not good. This was less than the shows they did in California, which really weren't even that important. You know, like the main event was a random Golden Lovers tag match that didn't have that much. That was basically build up to King of Pro Wrestling in a lot of ways. If that. And I don't want to tear the fans apart or anything like that. Because to me, as I mentioned earlier, the fans in attendance. This was a small number, but every person in that arena, they gave their best effort. They wanted the show to be successful. They wanted to have a good time. And they wanted to elevate the show to the fans and show people that, hey, Dallas is legit about their wrestling. And that's awesome. I think a big thing that hurt this, and we could get into the whys behind this. It doesn't really matter. The number is what it is, no matter what you want to make of it. They could go into the red on this, which is unthinkable, but I think it's likely that Mark Cuban, the Access TV owner, it's very likely that they got a pretty sweet deal for this, and it wasn't anything that's going to break them financially. It's more the aesthetic of it that is harmful, and what it means for the future as well. Because this was a very, very bad sign, I would argue. And I think the writing was on the wall the last time
you know, when they went to the Cow Palace and it was basically a half-empty arena, according to Kenny Omega, in his promo afterwards. Thankfully, we didn't see a repeat of that promo here, but really the writing was on the wall that they were not handling things the right way. And I think that the G1 first show, the fact that they advertised the card poorly, they didn't get the matches out fast enough. The elephant in the room really is this. With AEW around, their chances got way smaller of growing in America. Like, that's really the problem. You know, they sold out 20,000 seat arenas in 15 minutes or whatever. And they could have done even more than that. They could have sold out a 50,000 seat arena the day of, I think. I you know, Elite coverage, you can say what you want about Meltzer or whatever, but the fans are legit of the AEW right now, and they've got the buzz. New Japan doesn't have the buzz right now in America. That's the sad truth. This show could go a ways in helping rectify that, because I don't think the last few shows really weren't, to me, the peak of their American shows were the show where the Golden Lovers faced the Young Bucks in the main event. That's when New Japan felt like the true number two promotion in the U.S. They felt like the hot company. They were doing things and making waves that we hadn't seen before. And funnily enough, that was the same time as, you know, the Bullet Club feud that was allegedly leading up to All Elite, or, you know, All Elite Wrestling, you know, All In, whatever you want to call it. The Cody Rhodes and Kenny Omega match in Ring of Honor really flopped and didn't do a good job building it up. And that's where the whole storyline really came crumbling. New Japan had a chance to do something special, and I don't think they took advantage of it enough, to be quite honest with you. But the past is the past. We can't change it. It is what it is now. To me, what they're doing is just not working. If you ask my opinion, which it's my show, you probably want to know my opinion if you listen to this. If I were in power in New Japan, to me, to round about what I was saying earlier, what they're doing is clearly not working. 48-46 is clearly not working. Like, there's no nice way to spin this, like I said. You know, I saw some people saying, oh, you know, it's still good, though. People's expectations are too high. No, it's not too high. They're the ones who booked the building. They're the ones who booked the 18,000-seat building, motherfucker. Like, that's what I wanted to say. You know, like, those are the expectations. You don't run these arenas to sell, you know, fill them up, whatever percentage this was. You know, just like the other one. That was my point on the Cow Palace, when people were trying to say, oh, if Ring of Honor did this, it would be great. Like, who gives a fuck? Like, that doesn't even matter. Like, that's a completely irrelevant talking point to me. That's like saying, yes, like, this was a good number compared to indie shows. Awesome. That would be like if the New York Knicks came out, because let's face it, we know they're going to blow ass this season. Like, they're not going to win shit. But what if they came out? David Fitzdale came out and said, man, yeah, we won 20 games, or 25 games, if you want to be nice. But listen, imagine if a Chinese basketball league team came in. They wouldn't even win 25 games. They would win like 5 games, maybe. So, like, they're pretty jealous of us, huh? No, like, no, that's not how this works. You know, you don't ever compare yourself to Ring of Honor, first of all. That's a very bad comparison, especially right now. But especially when you look at the landscape of American wrestling, New Japan's, their expansion plans are on the hot seat right now, to me. And I wouldn't be surprised if there was a lot of conversations going on, you know, when this is all said and done, about how they're going to handle it. If I were in power, basically, I would say this. And just what I said, first of all, it's not working. Secondly, I would present two options of how they can do this. And one of them, I think, is a bad idea at this point. And the bad idea is that, look, it's not working. Let's double down on this American thing. Like, we want to go all out on this. And we want to make people know we're here. We're a threat. We are an American promotion. We're a worldwide promotion, just like WWE. We have that. And we're going to put our best foot forward. We're going to have a lot of shows. We're going to have title matches. Maybe the Access show becomes a U.S. show. Whatever their grand scheme, their big plan is in the grand scheme of things, they could go all out with it. Which is what I think they should have done after that show that I mentioned with the Golden Lovers and the Young Bucks. I remember thinking that at the time, that I thought they need to strike while the iron is hot because it's not going to be this way forever. And they missed their opportunity. You know, like if it were me, that literally either that night on the show or the night after, there would have been some kind of announcement about whatever their goal is for America. Because we don't know what that is. I don't know what that is. You don't know what that is. It could be, they could be ended up fine with this, you know, by just doing a thing, I think. But it's still hard for me to believe that, considering the shows they ran and what they have in mind. To me, though, if they had a big plan that they were planning to execute 2 or 3 years down the line, I would have rushed it forward. They had the momentum, they had all the momentum in the world, and I think they would have elevated themselves way more if they did that. Now we're seeing the issue of, with AEW around, a lot of these guys and girls that were flying in before, they're all at AEW right now. You know, like their tickets are booked for All Out. They're not booked for the G1. You can't do both. I mean, you can do both if you're made of money, but normal people don't think that way. It's the same thing in Japan with Corcoran Hall shows. Like, you can basically watch wrestling every night of the week there, but the normal people can't just afford to go there every single night, you know. So you really, a lot of fans, I think, had the choice of one or the other, and AEW has the buzz right now. And it's going to be hard for New Japan to get them back. Get that buzz back that they lost, you know. But if they want to go all out, I would understand where they're coming from. They're just to try and salvage this. They put a lot into it. They might as well see this whole thing through. That would be better than what they're doing, which is kind of like half-ass, you know. This was a step forward, the G1 in Dallas. I think that was a step forward for them, but not a big enough step forward, as we could see with the attendance level. The other option to me, which I think would be a lot smarter, especially right now, you know, I think they should just take a step back and realize that they're not the it promotion right now. AEW is the one that has the fans' attention right now in America. Maybe it won't always be that way. There may come a day where we've seen one librarian skit too many, and the fans start turning away. I've already seen some concern from a lot of people that are maybe fringe fans. Hardcore being the elite watchers, it doesn't matter what they do. Like, they just love these guys, you know? So really, no matter what they do, it doesn't really matter. And like, that fan base will always be there. But a lot of people want to see a great product, you know? So AEW has to live up to that reputation, live up to that buzz they've created, just like New Japan had to, and they didn't do, unfortunately. And I mean, I'm not even doubting AEW. I've always said that you can't doubt them right now. They've been successful too many times in a row. But you never know. You know, wrestling works in weird ways. You never know what could happen in the next 2-3 years. But for me, I think New Japan might just want to cool it down. They've had a lot of bad press for this show, even leading into it. The U.S. shows at the beginning of the year were an absolute disaster, with the visas not working. It was a really, really bad look. And I think that might have had something to do with it as well. But still, with the G1, I don't think that had as much of an effect as some people might try and claim. We knew these guys were coming for the G1. So it is what it is, more or less. I'm sure there were some spite not buyers, but I really think most of the buyers probably wanted to go to All In, and New Japan's just not let it left a good taste in people's mouths with their U.S. shows and what they've been doing the last year or so. So I think taking a step back, saying, hey, we're going to run one big show. Maybe you could do this kind of arena, this 20,000-seat arena or whatever. You won't have the novelty of Madison Square Garden in the first, you know, for the first time ever. But just run a big show with a lot of people. I think they'd fill it up on WrestleMania weekend. You could leave a good impression on the fans. Restore some of that specialness of New Japan in the U.S., which I think they've lost too. I think that has something to do with it. Try and restore some of that specialness. And maybe in 3 or 4 years, AEW won't be as big of an issue. Take some time away. Maybe you could do a big, you know, a G1 again in Chicago or New York. A lot of people were dogging Dallas, but I actually don't think that is as big of a factor. You know, I think no matter where they were, it would have likely have been the same, to be honest. I don't think it would have made a big difference no matter where they were. I'm not saying that it wouldn't have made any difference. You know, if you're in Chicago, maybe you get an extra 1,000 people. But I don't think no matter where they went, they weren't filling up an 18,000 to 20,000-seat arena. I'm sorry. I really don't think that would happen. I don't even think they would come close, to be honest, no matter what city they were in. I don't think Dallas was the problem at all. This fan base was super rabid. They did an amazing job. And every person, all 48, 46 of those people in Dallas deserve a pat on the back because they were awesome for the most part. So I really got to praise them. The future, there are a lot of question marks for this U.S. expansion right now. And it'll be interesting to see where it goes. I don't think their success is as vital as it once was, again, with AEW around. But I do think they need to rethink some things and change their strategy a little bit. I'm not saying they have to totally rewrite everything, but clearly something they're doing isn't working, and that's just the bottom line of it. But after they announced that, let's get into the G1 shows now. All the matches, we had 5 of them on the show, as you'll have every night for the G1 shows. Things kicked off with the hometown hero, Lance Archer, coming out to face Will Ospreay. Now, this was an awesome match. I asked this after the show about the match of the night, but to me, this was it for me. I thought this was a fantastic performance for both men. Archer really came out. This is somebody I've had a lot of high hopes for. I liked him in his G1. I was controversial when I said he was a better fit for New Japan than Davey Boy Jr. And in general, I liked them apart better than together. But I think Archer especially had something to him. And Noah, I thought he could have been a main eventer too. I thought he really got over with the crowds there well. And was one of the few highlights of the Suzuki-Gun run in Noah. Ospreay, everybody already talks about how great he is, so I don't need to hammer it into the ground. But man, you got to give it up to him, because he had another fantastic match here. He was really the MVP of the Best of the Super Juniors, and I know a lot of eyes are on him. Not necessarily for wins and losses, but to be the MVP of the tournament. I think a lot of people are on his side and rooting for him anyway. But in this match, whether you loved him or hate him, I think you got to give him props for this. You got to respect this kind of match because he had a lot of great work here. Cool spots. They did some wild stuff. They did a Sasuke special, but Archer cut him off and they hit a choke slam on the table or on the floor early on. It was a wild move here. Ospreay took all the risk as you knew he would. Archer really dominated for a lot of the match here. They did a great job. Ospreay did a phenomenal job of putting this guy over as well. As the junior champion, he did a lot of good work. And he ended up winning with the blackout, the super blackout from the ropes. And then he locked on the claw, which was just a phenomenal finish, I thought, in Texas. This was awesome. Great start to the tournament.
In prior years, Yoshihashi was the guy who led off the tournament a lot of the times. He had been in that role a few times with matches with Nagata, Makabe, which were both were matches of the night. Great matches. Unfortunately, get forgotten about, you know, obviously the start of the tournament, and because Yoshihashi's not that favorable to a lot of fans. But wrestling-wise, those were great leadoffs to the tournament. And Ospreay has really taken that role here and ran with it, because this was an excellent match. I think this was better than their first match, and Lance Archer's best match I've ever seen. And he had a lot to do with it, too. This wasn't any kind of carry job. Don't let people fool you into that. Archer was great here, and Ospreay was awesome as well. These two have a lot on the line here. Striga's really high on Archer. I looked at his picks. He's got Archer going, getting a lot of points this tournament, and I had Archer getting the win over Ospreay as well here. So, good win for Archer to start off the tournament. Ospreay, the champ, goes down with a loss early on. And now the match I got wrong, unfortunately, of the picks. The only match I got wrong, Bad Luck Fale versus Evil. This match sucked. Like, there's this, you know, there was a ton of stuff with the chairs and all kinds of crap like that. The referee was arguing. It was a bunch of bullcrap. Like, you know, this went about 12 minutes and probably about 10 minutes too long. Fale did absolutely nothing to rectify my concerns of him. And I thought Evil really needed this win, to be honest with you, because I don't know who else he could beat in this block besides his other opponents, which were all smaller guys like Ospreay, Zach, Kenta. I mean, I just don't see him getting any kind of win over Tanahashi or, you know, Okada or anything like that. I don't know, man. I think Evil might be one of these guys that takes the fall in the tournament because there's so many big names involved that there are going to be some people that score real low. And I had him at 8 points, and this was, you know, this is one of his wins on my bracket. 6 points, I think, could definitely very well happen. I could see him getting a win over Sonata, you know, now, though that was a match I gave to Sonata early on. We'll have to see how it goes, but I thought it was a bad start wrestling-wise for both men. Evil didn't look good either, to be honest with you. He wasn't into this, I feel like, and I don't blame him. So, definitely the worst match of the show. Bad match. Don't watch it. Next up, Sonata and Zack Sabre Jr. Zack made a lot of waves with his great promo work at the press conference. He was awesome, you know, as you would expect. That's something he always has, you know. The Japanese crowd, they can't really understand him, but the English-speaking one, huge into Zack right now. And so this was a long match here. This went over 20 minutes. This was the longest match of the show up to this point. It was longer than Kenta and Kota Ibushi. Yeah, so the last three matches were all around the same length of time, more or less. This was in between the other two. But they had a lot of great counter work here, as you would expect with a Sonata match. He continued his gimmick here. These two, I thought it was an interesting matchup because a lot of these guys have, or these two a lot of the times have a syndrome I like to call technical spot monkey syndrome, where they just do stuff which is cool, but doesn't actually serve any purpose, really. Like Sonata's counters or Zack Sabre Jr. going into 10 submissions over and over that all don't really mean that much. I'm not really a big fan of that style. We had your Paradise Lock and all of that, of course. But it got over to this crowd. The crowd was into this. You know, you can't deny that. And Sonata, no matter where he goes, I always downplay him in my personal view of him. But wherever he goes, the guy is over. The crowd buys into him in Japan and in America. Zack really over in America here as well. They had all kinds of stuff here. They set up a finishing stretch where Zack was looking for the Zack driver, which is obviously the Michinoku driver. It was countered into a skull end. It looked really cool. He went for the Muta Moonsault, but he got countered into a triangle choke. Good spot there. But Sonata fought back and locked in the skull end. But still, Sabre ended up, they did a segment at the end where Zack went with the European clutch,
But Sonata used the prawn hold as a counter to score the win. Great finishing sequence. Love the technical work here. I might not have loved this as much as some people would, but I think I liked it. To be honest, I think I'm with a lot of people here because I didn't think it was the match of the night. I would probably rank it of the G1 matches probably the fourth best, but it only shows to what a quality show this was because this was a legit good match. You know, whatever star rating you want to have for it, I'll probably go on Grapple and rate it a little bit later. I don't know what that is really, but they had a really good match, I thought, here. Rock solid work. The 21 minutes didn't drag, in my opinion. I thought they did a really good job. Very clean work for both men. As you would expect, these are two of the best at, in terms of being smooth and clean and doing the moves right. These are two of the best in the company, in my opinion, at that. And I thought they worked really well together. So, good match with Sonata and Zack Sabre Jr. I like this better than I thought it would, even. I would go ahead and say. And Sonata got the win. So, good push for Sonata. I think he's somebody that people are underrating kind of coming into the tournament. It's like nobody's paid attention to his push this year. And like, he's been pushed really the first five months of the year. And people just think he's like this weird underdog. I don't know. But still. You know, and not just push, he was basically the main pushed guy for like 2 months, outside of Okada, obviously, and maybe Jay White, you could say as well. But still, Sonata, I think, is going to surprise some people in this tournament. A little bit more than Zack. I think Zack, some people might be letting their British-colored glasses, their liberal-colored glasses, considering his political leanings, sway their voting a little bit. The semi-main event, Kenta making his G1 Climax debut versus Kota Ibushi. Man. You know, like, when you watch this match, you think of the amazing performances they had against each other years and years ago in Noah. In the tag match with Kenta and Ishimori versus Ibushi and Marufuji. But here, again, about a 21-minute match here. This was more along the lines of a Kenta match here, which I thought was smart of them to work. They didn't try to do anything really wild. This was more like a Kenta-style match, which I thought was good. And I thought it really worked well. I love the variety of the show, too. You had a big man versus small man match to kick things off. You had the crappy garbage match, which we don't like or care about. You know, we could just swipe that one from the records. But you had the big man versus little man match. You had the great technical work of Sonata and Zack Sabre Jr. Both men did a great job in that match. And Kenta and Ibushi, hard-hitting match here, I thought. Shibata was there watching on early on. Ibushi tried to ground things a little bit, but they still went with kicks. You know, he wanted to keep Kenta on the ground early on. He had some really stiff shots here. Ibushi totally worked this style well, which, I mean, you knew he would with the shoot boxing background. Kenta kicked back, and his kicks were really hard. He did a really good job there, and that's when you knew it was on. He laid one in onto him after he hit this draping knee drop, and it was on. It was awesome. Kenta ended up doing some really cocky heelish work too, which, I mean, it's not even like a heel persona. We did a thing where we were on Rage in the Cage 3. Striga was trying to portray him as like always a heelish figure, which he is. Like he's like a cocky little prick, but you know, in his prime. But it kind of made him more popular in a way. It's like it was for the crowd as much as him almost. I always took it. It was like he wasn't really a heel sometimes. He was more like a cocky dick, but was beloved by the fans for whatever reason. And he did a little bit of that here. He had the little cocky kicks, knee to the head. He took control of the match, but they had a one count here. It was just a great match. The back and forth was wild. Kenta countered the Kamigoye at one point, and then it led to Ibushi locking in a crucifix pin, which was great. Then the Busaiku knee kick setup, which was a great... They set that up perfectly, the Busaiku knee kick spot where they were both down. It was a great fighting spirit kind of tiredness setup they had there.
It all came down to a kick battle, as you would expect. Kenta scored with the head kick first. Just put him away with tons of head kicks. Just kicked him down. It was awesome. He banished him to the Shadow Realm with this last kick that he hit him in. Kenta then dropped the knee pad, the go-to-sleep hit, and it was a win for Kenta, as I predicted. So this was a really strong match. I have to say, I enjoyed seeing this. It definitely felt like, you know, Kenta is back. But this never reached... Okay, see, here's the thing. Maybe it's my fault because of my expectations. But when I want to see Kenta, when I think of the old Kenta and the Kota Ibushi of today, which is way better than the Kota Ibushi of yesteryear, to me, this wasn't the match of the night. And stylistically, I think it should have been. So even though I really liked it, I thought it was a really strong match, better than any WWE match Kenta had. I think we can safely say that. But I don't think it got to that next level that I think it could have or that I was looking for, especially with Ibushi in there. Last year, he had an amazing run with many great matches. This really didn't live up to the level of an Ibushi and an Ishii or an Ibushi Tanahashi. This is more like the Ibushi Goto match, I feel like, in a lot of ways. They had a very similar match, which is a really great match, a really good match, almost great. You could, if you wanted to give this like a 4 stars or whatever on the Meltzer scale or the star rating scale, if you want to give this like 4 stars or whatever, I'd be with you. You know, I wouldn't argue it. You know, but to me, I thought the Archer and Ospreay match had the vibe that I wanted this one to have. Obviously, completely different match stylistically, but I thought the crowd and what the people thought on Twitter and just the feeling that I personally got when I saw that Archer and Ospreay match, I thought, damn! You know, like, that's kind of how I thought. Like, this was a freaking awesome-ass match. Kenta and Ibushi, I thought that was really cool. I got to see Kenta be a great worker again, kick the hell out of people. They kicked each other harder and harder. Super stiff work. Great stuff. But it wasn't the match of the night. It wasn't something that really popped me. You know, I didn't, like, jump off my seat that I would have in the old Kenta kind of matches, you know. So still, that's just a little bit of a nitpick. They didn't do anything wrong. I just thought that there was another level that I wanted to see. Before I anoint Kenta one of the best workers again, or that the old Kenta is back, I think the 2019 Kenta is still really good, like we've seen in this match. And it was against Ibushi again. I can't stress that enough. I think that might be the problem here, is that with Ibushi, I have such high standards that what will Kenta do against lesser competition? And this block does have a lot of great workers in it, so the drop won't be dramatic, but to me, Ibushi was the best wrestler in A block, and he got him right off the bat, which was a great booking call and really helped him get over here because the crowd was super into it. The go to sleep hitting was awesome. Love taking the knee pad off. That's one of my favorite spots in wrestling, is setting up for that. He played to the crowd good. He looked like he was having a lot of fun. Ibushi was great, as you would expect. But this won't be, I think it'll be really unlikely this makes my top 10 of the tournament. I have to be honest with you. And a lot of people agreed with me, by the way, at least on when it came to Match of the Night voting. Really, only one person pointed out this match. But it all led to the main event, Kazuchika Okada versus Hiroshi Tanahashi. They set this up on commentary as both of these two being 5-5-3 overall, with all three draws coming in G1 matches. And the first two are two of my favorite matches of theirs. Like, I think that's those two might be my favorite matches that they've had together. I know a lot of people talk about Invasion Attack, but to me, the G1 matches were better, you know, and more complete and more dramatic and just awesome to me. This match wasn't as good as those, I have to say, but the crowd was into this again. I thought they elevated it here. I was reading online that a lot of people weren't buying into Tanahashi for some reason here. But I was really confused by that, because every year he really brings it in these main event matches. And of course he was going to bring it in America versus Okada in the main event. These two, honestly, if you've seen their matches, you know what you got here. There was nothing here to really differentiate this match from last year's match, besides like the draw, obviously, in the last match. But if you've seen their matches before, you know what you're getting here, you know. I think the highlights of the match, to me, they had a moment where Okada set up for the Rainmaker and Tanahashi countered into a small package. I thought that was a really great near fall. He used the Dragon Suplex as well, which I always like seeing. That was his original finishing move. And the small package was his, one of his finishing moves too. So that was cool. Tanahashi just tried to slap him down. Somewhat similar to how Kenta kicked Ibushi down, Tanahashi tried to slap Okada down, but basically he tried to get him, and he went a little too far, and Okada countered him running into him into a tombstone. It was a Rainmaker, and he won the match. This was like the base version of their match. Like I said, if you've seen him before, you know what you're getting. This wasn't I wouldn't call this a great match, personally. You know, I don't think any of the last three were, like, great, great matches that will be in my top tens or anything like that. But they were all really good, you know. And they were borderline. I'll say they were borderline great. You know, if you wanted to say they were, I wouldn't fight you over it. I just had them a little bit lower. Like, you know, like I said, using the grapple scale ratings, to me it would be, like, 3.75 for all three of these matches. Not necessarily 4 stars or 4.5 or whatever you want to call it. I just don't think they were strong, strong matches. The Lance Archer and Ospreay match was. That was a freaking great-ass match, like I said. But still, these guys doing their things, they know each other so well, like the back of their hand. And this feud meant so much to so many people. Not as much me personally, because I really didn't like Okada for a lot of that run. I thought he was way too Okada for much of that. But from a pure wrestling perspective, I thought they did a fine job. It was the kind of match you'll probably like. If you loved all of their other matches, check it out. If you didn't like them, then you know not to watch this match because you're not getting anything different here. I thought Tanahashi especially deserves a lot of credit because of his injuries and everything he's doing. You know, no matter how injured he is, whether he's way healthier than everybody thinks, or he's even worse than everyone thinks, he's still Tanahashi, and he can get it done. Overall, though, we had Okada coming out after the match, or not coming out, but he took the microphone after the match. And it was obvious to me. I think that's another thing that kind of hurt it for me. There really wasn't any drama. I was 100% convinced that Okada would win this match and end the show, cutting a promo and posing and the crowd going nuts. That's the image New Japan wants for their world champion, especially Okada, who is their golden boy in a lot of ways. Okada cut a promo after the match, and he, you know how it goes. The crowd was into it. He even said something like, "What'd you guys think of the show?" The crowd went nuts for it. He did a good job. You know, honestly, he did a pretty good job for an English promo. Yeah, he basically said it's the first time the G1 will be in America, but it won't be the last. They're coming back, and when they do, he'll be the G1 winner, and he'll still be the champion. And he thanked Dallas, and it was a good promo, way better than that stupid Kenny Omega promo last year where he said the crowd was half empty. This was a professionally done promo, even in another language. Okada did a very good job here, so props for that. I didn't love the match as much as, you know, maybe you did, but still, I thought this was a great start to the tournament. A really strong show from A Block to start off, as we all expected. The Foley match sucked, but the other four were all really good, and I thought the Archer Ospreay match was a great, great match. Even on the undercard, I thought the Ishii tag match, you know, Ishii and Cobb tag match was great. Even the Goto and White tag was really good, I thought, too. And the three matches were, you know, Archer and Ospreay is my match of the night. But all three of the other ones, like I said, were really, really good, too. MVP,
I'm gonna be nice here. I know everybody's gonna say Ospreay carried that match, and it was he's gonna be the wrestler of the year. We've heard it all a million times. I'll give Archer the MVP of night one. How about that, huh? Give him the hometown bump. This isn't WWE where you get jobbed out on the Eastern Lariat. You know, when you're in your hometown, you get the props, more or less. So shout outs to Lance Archer, MVP of night one in my personal rankings. Archer and Ospreay, match of the night. Cannot wait for Ishii and Jeff Cobb on the B-Block show next week. And if you... Let's go ahead and do it. I'll give you my star ratings. Archer and Ospreay, 4.5. Fallen Evil, 1. And all three of the last three matches at 3.75. That's going to be my grapple rankings. Because I'm going to give you some... I'm going to give you some pure star ratings after this tournament where I add everything up, use my algorithm that involves, you know, best matches of the night, taking away the worst matches, things like that. It's a scientific process, and sometimes it even goes against my own personal feelings, you know, and that's why I like doing it, because it gives me a different perspective when you look at the metrics, so to speak, of wrestling. So, shout out to all these guys. Great show, I thought. Great start to the show. I wish there had been more people there, in all honesty, because I thought the guys that did show up had a great time. The crowd was absolutely awesome. And if you are a new New Japan viewer, which I gotta be honest, I don't know how many of those were watching this. Access doesn't have the best TV reception in America, or, you know, they're not on all the cable packages. If you're outside of America, maybe you don't know the story with Access, but they're not a top tier TV channel. So I don't know how that worked, but I thought the crowd was awesome, and I thought it was a great show, honestly. Would highly recommend 4 of the 5 G1 matches. And if you have enough time, you don't have to, but if you have enough time, watch the tag matches on the undercard, because I thought they were all good except for the... And they were all good, but I thought the first three were really strong. So with that said, before I get on out of here, I'll shout out the Twitter people. I messaged some people. I asked for some opinions on the show, and I'll read them out quickly since this is a free show for everybody. It's for the people, and I'll go to the people to end it. I asked what the match of the night was for the first night in Dallas, and what did you think about the production and the crowd? I made my opinions known. The show was awesome, and so was the crowd. The production had some moments, to be honest with you, when it comes to camera work. The ring mic was a little low early on. I got a comment saying that as well. It wasn't great, to be honest with you. But, you know, it is what it is. It wasn't anything that ruined the show or anything like that. You know, the crowd made up for whatever problems there were with production, in my opinion. So my first response was from Stephanie Chase, at Stephanie M. Chase on Twitter. What's up, Steph? She said her match of the night was Archer and Ospreay. Agreed. I got a response from Jake_Nazar. He said Tanahashi and Okada was his match of the night, and he liked it a little better than me. That's cool. You know, maybe he liked the other one a little less. I don't know. He said production was fine, the crowd was fine, but dumb. I disagree. I thought the crowd was really good here, actually. I thought this was the best American crowd they've had so far. Really, they only had one moment of goofiness, and that got mentioned by a lot of people. You know, their one screw-up, everybody took note of, so... I'll give him a pass for that. If you only screw up one time and say stupid stuff one time, it's all in good fun. I'm not going to rip on you for that. Kent Ward, he responded to me, and he was at the show. He was in Dallas. Kent Ward, he was at the show in Dallas, actually. He's at Fist of the MFK. He said either Tana versus Okada or Ospreay versus Archer. I mean, that's the overwhelming opinion. I think Ospreay and Archer was better, like, to be honest with you. He also said he thought ZSJ and Sonata was great. Agreed. Thought it was a really good match. So he really liked everything. He had a good time at the show. And pretty much everybody that went to the show that messaged me, they all said they had a great time. So I was really happy for that. I wish some people well that were there. A lot of good people at that show. So good stuff there. Captain Lou, at Captain Lou Japan, not Captain Lou Albano, but still, he said his match of the night was Okada and Tana. Crowd seemed to be one of the better and less annoying New Japan USA crowds I've seen. except for the Let's Go Red Shoes chant. And that did happen, where they chanted for Red Shoes. It was goofy. I'm not going to defend it, but I'm also not going to bury it either. It was just in fun. It was really the one part of the night that wasn't great. It was no big deal. He said ring miking was too low during the first match, but seemed to improve in the next matches. I thought so too. Ryan at the Not Smart Mark on Twitter, at Not Smart Mark on Twitter. So he's not smart, but he's a mark. He said Sonata versus ESJ was probably my favorite match. Thought production was good. It was good enough, and the crowd added a lot to the show, especially in the main event. I would agree with all of that. I thought the production could have been a little bit better, but it didn't distract from the show too much. And I like Sonata's ESJ too. Maybe, like, there are a lot of divergent opinions now that I'm looking at it. A lot of people have a lot of different favorite matches, and I thought they were all good. So that's a sign of a good show when you have multiple matches of the night from depending on who it was. I don't know what Striga thought, who his match of the night was. To me, it was Archer and Ospreay, though. I have a feeling he'll agree with me, to be honest. At John Nevy, at X John Nevy, he messaged me. He said, my favorite match was Ishii and Umino versus Kaba and Narita. He even had the exclamation point. Love it. Love the pick of that. Thought the production was subpar, especially for a crew that should be used to shooting wrestling by now. Crowd was fine for the most part. I see where you're coming from. I don't think it was bad enough to detract from it, but it could have been better. They missed some stuff throughout the show. Commentary was solid, too, on the English feed. You know what you're getting. I love Rocky on commentary. I think he's a great color commentator. Adds a lot to the show. So, really happy whenever Rocky is in the booth. At Sandy Jimenez, at Srod underscore Princesa, she says that she got 3 out of 5 matches right. She had Fale over Evil, but I got it wrong. Ibushi and Kenta was a toss-up, but really thought Will was going to beat Lance Archer. Shocked that it didn't happen, but that was an amazing match. I agree. I told her my opinion. I even replied to her afterwards saying Archer would win in his hometown and Ospreay beat him earlier in the year. That's what, if you listen to the G1 preview show, you know what to look for, because I gave you all the hints and the secrets and stuff like that of Gato booking in New Japan. So I was very convinced Archer would win, and it worked out. Jerry at Suplex Senpai. Ah, Jerry. It's good that you messaged. I'm glad you responded. He said, I keep going back and forth between Ospreay and Archer and Tana versus Okada. I don't know about the production, but the crowd made every match feel fun and special. Loved every minute of the show, aside from the Red Shoes chants. It is what it is. Y'all are making me want to bury Red Shoes chants right now. And I was nice to the crowd. Love the Dallas crowd. Y'all are trying to turn me against them on Twitter, but I'm not gonna fall for it. Jose Serrano at Maverick 9412. Now Maverick, Dallas, could he be a Mark Cuban fan? I know he's a listener to Lucha Talk, so shout out to Jose. I really respect your opinions too. Your Lucha Talk Year End Awards ballot was one of the best ones that we got. So here he is, a longtime listener of Lucha Talk, Lucha fan. And he showed that him in Japan, he says Kenta and Ibushi was the match of the night for him. So, hey, he disagrees with me. Good stuff. I like that because I want people to like Kenta. First time ever seeing Kenta, which I can't believe. First time ever seeing him, and he's hooked. The atmosphere in the building was amazing. Shame it wasn't filled more. And I told him, I said, man, the number was bad, but everybody in that crowd had a lot of heart and made the show better. He posted a very fun picture of Okada on the big screen, and he said, also the building loved the Cobb Narita versus Ishii and Umino match. That came through on TV. Overall, I'd say the fans that purchased a ticket showed their passion in each match, although I find it hard for New Japan to return to Texas. Like I said, I really think that's an overblown talking point. I think it would have happened that way no matter where they went. The difference would have been a difference. I think maybe, yes, there are places there could have been bigger, but I think it would have ended up this way. If they ran a 20,000 seat anywhere in America, it would have ended the same, in my opinion. He said, yeah, even I messaged back and he responded, yeah, even I found myself standing up during the Okada and Tana intros. they gave us goosebumps during the early interactions. And you could tell that this was a special match for the U.S. crowd. And that's why they did it here. That's why they didn't do it in Japan, because you get the crowd having goosebumps. First time ever in USA. Great decision, booking-wise. He says he's going to watch it on TV sometime next week to see how it looked. I thought it came across just how you said it did, Jose. And I think you're going to like it just as much on rewatch as you were live. I'm glad you guys had a lot of fun. Someone else who was there live, Aaron Quinn, at Miss Aaron Quinn on Twitter, says Archer and Ospreay was her match of the night, but thought everything delivered. Missed some of Fall 8 Evil. So no wonder you thought everything delivered. You missed the worst match. Show was very good wrestling-wise. A-plus is a live experience. Awesome. Love hearing that. Your number one wrestling friend, Ferrante, at Rules Goldberg. So, big Goldberg fan. Nothing wrong with that. I'm a big Goldberg fan, too. He said Ospreay versus Archer was the match of the night. Tana and Okada was outstanding as well. So, that's the consistent consensus. Those two were the big matches that everybody loved, pretty much. Niagara Driver, longtime listener of Pure Heart, Pure Lariat. And by long time, I mean 2 months. We've only had 5 episodes. There'll be a new episode of that coming up very soon, in the next couple of days, too, for all the free subscribers and Patreon guys, too. And girls, obviously. So really good stuff there. You know, while the G1's on break, listen to the Joshi show, because I've got a good show planned for you guys, if all comes together well. Things were up and down with Pure Heart this week, but I still made it work. And I've got some, I'm still not abandoning that or anything like that, because wrestling of all kinds is a big part of my life, and I'm very happy to do that. So he says, at Niagara Driver 93, big shout out to Kyoko Inoue with his username as well. He said that Tanahashi and Okada was his personal fave, but Ospreay and Archer was just incredible. Ed from WC at Wrestling Click, he says, match of the night, clearly Ospreay and Archer for me. I agree. The other big matches were very good, but never hit that next level. I mean, we pretty much completely agree. That's what I thought too, Ed. And I think that's all the comments I got on Twitter. Thank you to everybody who messaged me. Hopefully you're all listening to this. You got to be on the show. Shoutouts to Striga. He'll be back in a little while. We'll be doing some kind of show in G1, probably after the next show. Obviously, he'll have some more time going forward. Hopefully, we can do something a little bit different, too. But I'm looking forward to being back with my partner, you know, normally guided, so we can have the full Eastern Lariat experience on Patreon, as well as for the all the listeners out there. And I'll plug that one more time. This is the free edition of the show. All the rest of the live reactions, the one that come across, you know, a couple of hours after the show ends, or maybe the morning after, you got to hit Patreon for that. And we've got 3 different tiers, the Chono, Muto, and Hashimoto tiers, $1, $3, and $5. And look, this is a great deal for you guys. Now, I'm not trying to, like, sell you on nothing. I'm just being real with you right now. If you're somebody that's listening to this, and you're a free subscriber, you're on the fence, you're like, man, a fool, you know, having to pay for this? I don't want to do that. Look, I'm not hating on you, but just give it a chance. You know, like, if you're like, yeah, I love what these guys do, Dylan and Striga, they're awesome guys. They give great, great coverage. They know their stuff about Japanese wrestling. Dylan's kind of crazy sometimes, but I still like him anyway. If you're on the fence, just hit that $1 tier. You don't even have to hit the $5 tier. You don't even have to hit the $5 tier. Just hit the $1 tier. Give it a shot for a month. And I think you'll like what you hear. And maybe you'll want to give the $5 tier a checkout, or the Muto tier a checkout, you know. The $1 tier, you get all the live reaction shows for this and other things. You get Rage in the Cage. Great show. Our old Senshu Shokai on Stardom, which is still relevant no matter when you sign up. It's a great listen, so check that out. And you get our introduction podcast where I get personal You know, talking about my life, Striga's life. We get a little bit. It's a deep podcast for 2 hours. You know, it's well worth it. Really, that's worth the dollar alone. But the New Japan, every single show of the G1 will be covered on all three tiers. For $3 tier, you get all the stuff from the $1 tier. Plus, you get Tiger Cast W, a show about anime. Tiger Mask W, obviously. You get the U.S. Adventures. I'll be doing another show of that this month. I had to take a break from WWE and American Wrestling, Ring of Honor in general. But for the pay-per-views, maybe, I'll try and give you guys some U.S. wrestling, too, on the $3 tiers. Perfectly fits with Great Buddha's tier. You get some other stuff I'll be doing. I'll be doing my first MMA podcast, Rise and Tide, on there. It's all good stuff. $5 Hashimoto tier, you get everything involved with the other stuff. You're going to get a ton of freaking content. It really is worth it. I'm not trying to sell you. Like, you get a lot of content for $5. You get all the same stuff. You get the spot lariats. Anything we can't talk about on the free show, which for this next month will probably be everything not New Japan in all likelihood, all of that stuff goes in the spot lariat. I give you great updates. We talked about Dragon Gate. I'll be doing one on Peter Pan. I'll be doing one on Kobe World later this month. How am I going to make time for all this wrestling? I don't know. I might have some guests on for that. You never know with me. But you'll definitely at least get it, you know. So if you want to keep up with stuff that's not New Japan as well, check out the $5 tier, Big Hosh tier. You're awesome. And I'll shout you out, you know. Next free show, we definitely need to get to that. I really want to thank all the $5 tiers especially, but really anybody from the $1, the $3, the $5. I just got to admit, me and Striga, last month exceeded my expectations big time. Like, based on what happened. I don't know how that all happened, but the fans are freaking awesome. I love you guys, man. Like, you know, I'm like not even kidding. Like, I think the Patreon subscribers are all freaking awesome. I love what you guys have done for both of us. You helped us out. Hey, I'll even tell you what I spent some of the Patreon proceedings on. First of all, I used it to buy the Dragon Gate service and the DDT service for this month. I bought Taco Bell for my family as well. And I'm going to use the rest to help Uber myself over to my grandma's tomorrow for her birthday, her 83rd birthday. Not my nanny, which is a great grandma. This is my other grandma. Now, we're not even technically, you know, my fake dad's mom. But still, I want to bring some good stuff there. So, you guys did a lot of good work for me. Made me really happy with all the stuff you guys did. And hopefully, everyone enjoyed the Patreon. We've got a lot of rave reviews for stuff like the Pure Heart. Stuff like the Hashimoto, the Week of Hashimoto that we had. That's a great series, too. You might want to check that out. And, yeah, the Patreon tier is really worth subscribing to, I feel like. But, like I said, even if you don't have a lot of money, that's okay. I'm not going to make you force you or try and beg you to sign up for anything. But just give that $1 tier a check if you can, you know. If you're on the fence, like I said, or maybe you doubt us, maybe you're like, oh, this is a good show, not my favorite, but I like what these guys do. Hit the $1 tier. The live action from the G1 will happen every night on the Eastern Lariat Patreon. And we'll still do some free shows for you guys too. So even if you don't, that's okay. We're still going to look out for you eventually. It'll be a few days later. But that's how it's going to be from here on for this next month. So hopefully it all works out well. We always love the G1, both me and Striga. Can't wait to see who wins the predictions. Right now, he's got me beat the first night. But we'll see if I can't make a comeback later on. Thank you to everybody, again, who signed up for Patreon, but even the free listeners, thank you so much for listening to me. I really appreciate it, and hopefully, I'll see you guys next time. Sayonara!